Chapter 8. The Grand Plan. Now we must go back to the first tale. When Mowgli left the wolf's cave after the fight with the pack at the Council Rock, he went down the valley to where the villagers lived. However, he did not stop there, because it was too close to the jungle, and he knew that he had made at least one bad enemy at the council. So he hurried on and followed a rough road at a steady pace until he came to a country that he did not know. The valley opened out into a great plain. At one end stood a little village, and at the other end, the thick jungle swept down toward the grounds where cattle and water buffaloes were grazing. When the little boys in charge of the herd saw Mowgli, they ran away. Mowgli walked on, for he was feeling hungry. When he came to the village gate, he pushed it to one side. Mowgli sat down by the gate, and when a man walked past, he stood up, opened his mouth, and pointed into it to show that he wanted food. The man stared at Mowgli, turned away, and ran up the one street in the village, shouting for the priest to come. The priest soon came to the gate, followed by at least 100 people, who all stared and talked and pointed at Mowgli. "They have no manners, these men," said Mowgli to himself. He frowned at the crowd. "What is there to be afraid of?" asked the priest. "Look at the wolf bites on his arms and legs. He is a wolf child who has run away from the jungle." Of course, wolf cubs had often lightly used their teeth on Mowgli when they had been playing together, but he would hardly call them bites. "To be bitten by wolves, poor child," said two or three women together. "By my honor, Messua," said another woman, "he is not unlike your boy that was taken by the tiger." "Let me look," said Messua as she gazed at Mowgli. "Indeed, he may be. He is thinner, but he has the look of my boy." "What the jungle has taken, the jungle has restored. Take the boy into your house, Messua," said the priest. The crowd split in half as the woman called Mowgli over to her hut. She gave him a drink of milk and some bread. Then she put her hand on his head and looked into his eyes. She thought, perhaps, that he might be her real son who had come back from the jungle where the tiger had taken him. So she said, "Nathu, oh Nathu!" Mowgli did not show that he knew the name. "You are very much like my Nathu, and so you shall be my son," said Messua. Mowgli knew that he must learn how to speak. So as soon as Messua pronounced a word, Mowgli would imitate it almost perfectly. Before dark, he had learned the names of many things in the hut. There was difficulty at bedtime, because Mowgli would not sleep under anything that looked so much like a panther trap as that hut. So he went out the window when they shut the door, and he stretched out in some long grass at the edge of the field. Before he had closed his eyes, a soft gray nose poked him under the chin. "Phew!" said Gray Brother, who was the eldest of Mother Wolf's cubs. "You smell like wood smoke and cattle, already like a man. Wake, little brother, I've brought news." "Is everything okay in the jungle?" said Mowgli, hugging him. "Listen, Shere Khan has gone away to hunt far off until his coat grows, for you burned it badly with the red flower. When he returns, he swears that he will kill you," said Gray Brother. This was not news to Mowgli, who knew that Shere Khan would one day come for him. "When I come here again, I will wait for you in the bamboo at the edge of the grazing ground," said the wolf. For 3 months after that night, Mowgli hardly ever left the village gate. He was busy learning the ways and customs of men. He did not know his own strength, but the village people said that he was strong as a bull. The priest told Messua's husband that Mowgli had better be put to work as soon as possible, and the village headman told Mowgli that he would have to herd the buffaloes in the field the next day. No one was more pleased than Mowgli about this. The custom of most Indian villages is for a few boys to take the cattle and buffaloes out to graze in the morning and bring them back at night. Mowgli went through the village street at dawn, sitting on the back of Rama, the great herd bull. The buffaloes rose out of their sheds and followed him. Mowgli drove them to the edge of the plain where the Waingunga River came out of the jungle. Then he dropped off Rama, trotted off over to some bamboo, and found Gray Brother there. "I have waited many days for you," said Gray Brother. "Is there any news of Shere Khan?" asked Mowgli. "He came back to this country and waited here a long time for you. Now he has gone off again, but he means to kill you."
"Very good," said Mowgli. "As long as he is away, you or one of the other brothers must sit on that rock so that I can see you as I come out of the village. When he comes back, wait for me in the ravine by the big tree in the center of the plain." Day after day, Mowgli would herd the buffaloes. Day after day, he would see Gray Brother's back a mile and a half away across the plain. This meant that Shere Khan had not come back yet. At last, a day came when Mowgli did not see Gray Brother at the signal place, so he led the buffaloes toward the ravine. There sat Gray Brother, every hair on his back standing up. "Shere Khan has hidden for a month to throw you off your guard." "He passed by the ranges last night with Tabaki," said the wolf out of breath. "Shere Khan's plan is to wait for you at the village gate this evening, for you and for no one else. He is resting now in the big dry ravine of the Waingunga." "Has he eaten today, or does he hunt on an empty stomach?" asked Mowgli. "He killed a pig at dawn, and he has drunk water, too," replied Gray Brother. Mowgli was satisfied and stood thinking. "The big ravine of the Waingunga opens out onto the plain about half a mile from here," he said. "I can take the herd around through the jungle to the head of the ravine and then sweep down, but he would sneak out at the foot. We must block that end. Gray Brother, can you cut the herd in two for me? I cannot speak their language." "Not I, but I have brought a wise helper," said Gray Brother. He trotted off, and soon Mowgli saw a huge gray head that he knew very well.
"Akela! Akela!" shouted Mowgli. "I had hoped that you wouldn't forget about me. Can you cut the herd in two, Akela? Keep the cows and their young together, and the bulls and the buffaloes by themselves." The two wolves ran in and out of the herd and separated it into two groups. Mowgli jumped onto Rama's back and said, "Drive the bulls away to the left, Akela. Gray Brother, when we are gone, hold the cows together, and then drive them into the foot of the ravine. Keep them there until we come down the hill." The wolves did as they were told and managed to get the two herds into position. The other herd children, watching with the rest of the cattle half a mile away, hurried to the village as fast as they could, crying that the buffaloes had gone crazy and run away. Mowgli's plan was simple enough. All he wanted to do was make a big circle uphill and get to the head of the ravine. Then he could take the bulls down the ravine and catch Shere Khan between the bulls and the cows. He knew that after a full meal and drink, Shere Khan would not be in any condition to fight or to climb up the sides of the ravine to escape. At last, Mowgli rounded up the confused herd at the head of the ravine on a grassy patch that sloped down very sharply to where Shere Khan was. From that height, he could see the sides of the ravine, which to his satisfaction ran almost straight up and down, and the creepers that hung over them would give no foothold to a tiger who wanted to get out. Mowgli put his hands to his mouth and shouted down the ravine, and the echoes jumped from rock to rock. After a long time, there came back the sleepy snarl of a full-fed tiger who had just woken up.
"Who calls?" asked Shere Khan.
"I, Mowgli. It's time to come to the Council Rock," he shouted.
Then he said, "Down! Hurry them down, Akela! Down, Rama, down!"
The herd paused for a moment, but Akela gave his hunting yell, and they streamed down the ravine, sand and stones flying up all around them. Once started, there was no chance of stopping, and the herd thundered down the ravine. They knew what was about to happen.
the terrible charge of the buffalo herd against which no tiger can survive. Shere Khan heard the thunder of their hoofs, picked himself up, and moved slowly down the ravine, looking for a way to escape. The herd thundered on, yelling as they went. Mowgli heard an answering call from the foot of the ravine. He saw Shere Khan turn, and then Rama suddenly tripped, stumbled, and went over the tiger as the bulls approached him. With the bulls at Rama's heels, the herd crashed into the cows and their young waiting at the foot of the ravine. The charge carried both herds out into the plain, stamping and grunting at each other.
"Quick, Akela, break them up! Spread them out, or they will be fighting one another!" shouted Mowgli.
Akela and Gray Brother ran around the buffaloes, getting them in order. Mowgli managed to turn Rama, and the others followed him to the watering hole.
"Brothers, that was a dog's death," said Mowgli, grabbing the knife he always carried around his neck. "His hide will look well on the council rock. We must get to work quickly."
With that said, Mowgli started skinning the 10-foot tiger. It was nearly evening before he and the wolves had taken the great skin clear off the tiger's body.
"Now we must hide this skin while I take the buffaloes home. Help me to herd them, Akela," said Mowgli.
When they got close to the village, Mowgli saw lights and what looked like half of the village waiting for him by the gate.
"This is because I have killed Shere Khan," he thought. But soon a shower of stones flew by his ears, and the villagers shouted, "Wolf's child! Jungle beast! Go away!"
"Now, what is this?" said Mowgli, confused, as the stones flew at him.
"Wolf's cub, go away!" shouted the priest.
"Again? Last time it was because I was a man. This time it's because I'm a wolf."
"Let us go, Akela," said Mowgli.
The buffaloes were anxious to get to the village, and they charged through the gate at Akela's yell, breaking the crowd apart.
"Goodbye, children of men, and thank Messua that I do not come in with my wolves and hunt you up and down your street," said Mowgli angrily.
Mowgli turned on his heels and walked away with Akela. And as he looked up at the stars, he felt happy.
"No more sleeping in traps for me, Akela. Let's get Shere Khan's skin and go home."
The moon was just going down when Mowgli and the two wolves came to the hill near the council rock, and they stopped at Mother Wolf's cave.
"The men have cast me out of the village, Mother," said Mowgli, "but I come with the hide of Shere Khan to keep my word."
Mother Wolf walked out of the cave with her family behind her, and her eyes shone when she saw the tiger's skin.
"I told him on that day, when he came here hunting for your life, that the hunter would be the hunted," said Mother Wolf.
"Little brother, it is well done,"
said a deep voice in the bushes. Bagheera appeared at Mowgli's feet. They climbed up the council rock together, and Mowgli spread the skin out on the flat stone where Akela used to sit. Akela lay down upon it and called the old call to the council.
"Listen, O wolves!" howled Akela.
Ever since Akela had been removed from his position as leader, the pack had been hunting and fighting as they pleased. Now they answered the call from habit and came to the council rock, where they saw Shere Khan's striped hide on the rock.
"Look, O wolves! Have I kept my word?" said Mowgli.
And all the wolves howled,
"Yes!"
One of the wolves said,
"Lead us again, O Akela. Lead us again, O man cub, for we are sick of this disorder, and we want to be the free people again."
"No," purred Bagheera. "You fought for freedom, and it is yours. Take it, O wolves."
"Both the man pack and the wolf pack have cast me out," said Mowgli. "Now I will hunt alone in the jungle."
"We will also hunt with you," said his four brothers.
So Mowgli went away and hunted with his brothers in the jungle from then on. He was not always alone, though, because years later he became a man and married. But that is a story for grown-ups.